CliffCentral.com. On a Wednesday, we've got Mbulalo here. We've got Lebang. We are busy, busy, busy this morning. We want to have your thoughts and your part to play. You have a part to play in the show. This morning, you know what to do. Message us live on YouTube. Oh, like and subscribe. Very important. And as we learned yesterday from a professional YouTuber, you need to comment down below. It also helps the algorithm. So yes, all of that stuff, you know, this is what we learn on a daily basis. We learn how to be better. So like, comment, subscribe, and I'm going to add, you also have to comment right there. Like in the top comment has to be yours. We'll keep bringing you all the best stuff we can as a kind of bonus to that. So lots of things to do this morning. What is this situation? And maybe you know something about this. The Gen Next Awards, which are happening, and I'm asking because I'm kind of out of the loop here. Lebang, you've been talking to people from the Gen Next Awards, and we're actually playing out one of those interviews at 8 o'clock this morning. So tell us what's happening. These are quite prestigious awards, right?
They really are. And, I mean, if you grew up in South Africa, I'm sure you have some sort of memory or connection to the Sunday Times, the newspaper. It was like part of the vibe, part of the energy. And they've really managed to remain relevant. So they'll be hosting the 17th annual Sunday Times Gen Next Awards on the 9th of September. And they are digital. So it's basically just an award show that kind of connects brands with the youth better and more authentic and more efficiently. So I think from around 8 o'clock every day, today, tomorrow, and Friday, we'll be playing. So some of the conversations that I had, I spoke to the MC, Zanella Portello. She is so funny. I spoke to Ibn Khevers as well. I spoke to a bunch of people just about how brands can connect more authentically with the youth, because we're seeing like a lot of trends where brands are just like, you know, struggling. Yeah, so these awards are going to be great.
It's a tough thing to be able to speak to young people authentically, because there's so many people who try to do it and it's just that falls flat. And it sounds like they're trying too hard. I mean, I've seen some horrendous ad campaigns where they're like, "Hey, young person, this is what you should be doing, X, Y, Z." It's like so bad. It's so patronizing. It's so crappy.
It's embarrassing. And it's really interesting that like the bulk of the power, like, rather the decision making lies in the hands of the youth, but all the like only 20% of the advertising is targeted at them. So there's really like a big shift that currently needs to happen between brands and, you know, connecting to the market. So they've also added a new category this year. So I'm just excited. There's a new category. I think it's between the ages of like 25 and 30. So like you're youth, but you know, you're a different type of youth. So they're really planning a lot of great things this time around. So tune in, I think, from 8.
What percentage of the decision making when it comes to products is made by young people?
You know, I don't know it off the heart, but only 20% of advertising is targeted at them, but around 60% of the actual decision making power lies in the hands of the youth. So that's really off balance. This is something that Yellowwood, the research company, actually found as a case study for the awards. So it's all like, you know, it's backed up, it's facts, it's credible sources, it's a reality. So the conversations get quite hectic. I mean, I'm quite brutal. I'm like, okay, cool, the awards sounds great, but like, are we actually going to see any change? Why are the brands so disconnected? Why are we still saying things like local is lacquer? So it's going to be a nice one.
Good. Listen to that. 8 o'clock this morning. And that is where Lebang spoke to Zanele Portelo, who's the MC for the Gen Next Awards. Also, Ivan Khievers, who is the head of advertising, sales, and trade marketing at Arena Holdings. And that is the 17th, believe it or not, annual Sunday Times Gen Next Awards. An important thing for anyone in marketing to be looking at. Anyone in sales, marketing, advertising, this is important. Pay attention, and we will bring you all of that. All right. So many things to do. We've got Ryan joining us in a short while. He was a soldier in Iraq and Afghanistan. I'm very excited to speak to him today. We've been talking quite a lot about Afghanistan lately because it's been in the news and for obvious reasons. But I've always been fascinated with that place. It's by no means somewhere that I would want to live. It's by no means somewhere that I would want to, you know, plan a luxurious holiday, because there's no such thing in Afghanistan. But it is an interesting country with an incredible history. And it's a country that's, they call it the graveyard of empires for a good reason. But I really am interested to hear about the experience of soldiers on the ground, what kind of people these Taliban are who've just taken over Afghanistan again after 20 years since the U.S. kind of forced them back under the rocks and into the caves that they used to be in. And now they're coming out again and they're in charge. And it just seems like, you know, you've reset the clock 20 years back. We'll find out from Ryan what that's all about. Also, as I said earlier, we'll talk a little bit about birth control with Alex from Contro and with one of the doctors who works with Contro about what we can do there. But before we get to any of that, Bulelo, what's happening on MKT show, Cliff Central Sport, today?
Plenty of Premier League action. We're back in the mix there. The NFL's coming back for those of you that are American-leaning. College football's coming back. The NBA's on its way back. And so we got plenty to talk about today. Tomorrow we have legendary college coach Kerry Keating. So he'll be on sort of every week, and we talk more American-leaning side. I mean, he's a legend. His father was a legend at Kansas, and there's an arena named after his father, and he worked with the Rockets and everyone in the NBA. So we've kind of got that segment. And then on Fridays, former Springbok Flip Funner Mav will be joining us every Friday for the last hour. We're going to call it the long lunch. If you're a South African, you know what that is. The classic. You know, when guys book the miraculously, you haven't had a meeting all week, but on a Friday, you've got the lunch from 1 o'clock till 4 o'clock, and it just so happens to be at an O'Hagan's or the Keg. It's miraculous. And it's always sort of 45 minutes away from the office. You know, it's a big client. Yeah. So the long lunch, Flip Funamadra, former Springbok.
You've had Flip on a couple of times before. He's terrific.
But yeah, he's going to join us every week now. So every Friday, 1 till 2, the last hour of the show, we'll end off the week on like just an awesome note, you know, talking sports and everything that's going on on the wonderful internet. So yeah, growing nicely and headed in the right direction.
Go ahead,
Mbulelo, I've watched you work on the show like in the past maybe couple of weeks, and you are so focused. I just want you to get yourself a belt, bro, because you are really doing this thing. You actually are. Like, you are just punching all your energy. Like, Mbulelo walks into the office like, hi guys, boom, he's just done. Like, we're all just having fat chats and laughing about life, and Bulelo's, yeah.
He's focused, yeah.
So he is so focused. And, like, I just want to take that piece of your book, and I'm just going to adopt that because I think that's just beautiful. All the other pages, yeah, we'll see. But that, chef's kiss.
Yeah, go ahead. And if you don't know what we're talking about, just go and watch it. It's really worthwhile. The MKT show, Central Sport. Subscribe and like and all that stuff on YouTube for them as well, not just for this show, so that we can make sure that we've got all your eyes and ears in the right places so we can bring you the best stuff. Okay, so Elon says, are you guys ever going back to the studio? What do you mean? Like, I have to wake up again at 4:30 in the morning, then schlep all the way into Rivonia every morning? Probably. I don't know when. You know, the fact is, like, we've added some new things to the show since we've been doing it remotely. And one of those things is video. So if we go back to the studio, I'm not doing video as well. Not a chance. So you can choose. Either you get to see the show, like we do it now, or you get to hear it from the studio. But you're not getting both.
Well, that's easy. The former. Like, no. We really added such a great element here. So...
I'm not going there, and then we've got lights and cameras and all that shit. This works just fine, thank you. And I can control it from here, and any technical issues, if I can't resolve them, Mbulelo can, and if Mbulelo can't, Simpiwe can, and if Simpiwe can't, then Greg can. But if we're in the studio, you actually need the live bodies on site, and sometimes that's not as easy to achieve. So no, if you like the visual aspect of what we're doing, then this is what you want. If you want us to do a radio show and that's all, and you don't get to hear us anymore, I mean, you don't get to see us anymore, but you just get to hear us, then sure, I'll go back to the studio tomorrow. It's up to you. You let us know. I'd be keen to know what. We have a little poll. Let's do a little poll, and you can tell us what you think. All right. I'm very, very pleased to hear suggestions from our audience from time to time. And, you know, we've got such amazing listeners who are connected to so many different people. I got an email from somebody just the other day, and she said to me, I know this dude called Ryan. He left South Africa and joined the British Army in 2004. He has been there, and he was on the ground in Iraq and Afghanistan for some time. And you've got to talk to him. So I said, sure, let's connect. And Ryan's actually on the line with us now. He was back in 2004. He joined the British Army. Two events that set him on that path, the 9/11 terror attacks, which I think were a major motivation for many people to take up arms and to do what they could to defend civilization. And I really do think it, the stakes were that high. And the other thing is that his mom died in 2002. So he was deployed to Iraq in 2005 as a private to a little town called El Amara on Operation Telex 6 as part of the ground-holding infantry contingent. In 2009-10, as a lieutenant, he was deployed to Afghanistan. Their role in the area was twofold. They were ground-holding and local national training and support, and they spent a long 8 months deployed there. In 2013 and 14, he was a captain, and he was deployed to Afghanistan again on Operation Herrick 19 as an artillery forward observer. As commander of a fire support team, his team's role was to control all offensive fires. That's artillery, mortars, attack helicopters, fast jets, etc., in support of the battle group that they were working with. So he's got some interesting stories to tell us. He's got some experiences that are unique, and I'm very pleased to have him with us this morning. Hey, Ryan, how are you doing? You're just on mute. Just unmute your mic there, and then we're good. Sorry, there we go.
The story of digital meetings. Yeah, thanks, Gareth.
I'm just glad it wasn't a trigger, or the Taliban would have shot you by now. But there we go.
True story.
So Ryan, I mean, what an interesting deployment. A couple of deployments you've had. First of all, let's just go back to the very beginning. You started in 2004 in the British Army, and as I read there, that you had two main motivations for that. Obviously, September the 11th, which I think shook a lot of people to their core. But your mum also died in 2002. Just explain those reasons to those people who wonder, why is it that some people want to get into a uniform and go to a dangerous place when they can just stay safe somewhere else? I mean, we're in the year of stay safe. You know, stay safe, stay home. Nobody wants to even leave their houses. What motivates people to do this?
So for me, you know, so obviously, you know, when 9/11 happened, obviously it shook the world. And I think, you know, a part of everyone, or I think most people kind of asked in themselves, like, what am I doing to prevent anything like this? And, you know, if it could happen to the States, it could really happen anywhere. So that was the first thing. And then when my mom passed away, you know, a lot of the stuff that I'd always thought, like, oh, wouldn't that be cool to do? I think it just brought how short life is into perspective. So I thought, you know, if you want to do something and if something drives you, why not just do it? If you fail and it doesn't work, well, then it doesn't really matter, to be honest. You can always just start again. And, you know, people have proved that time and time again that you can start again. So, I mean, those were the two of them. Like, I'd never, when I grew up, I never thought of joining the army. It was never ever one of my sort of dreams or wishes. And, like, I used to listen to my father talk about his time in the army and all his friends, and I thought it was cool. But, I mean, being honest, I don't think I was ever going to join the South African army. It just was never ever a path that I had thought of. And then, I saw that there were some...
In the South African army, you would have got fat and stayed on base the whole time. I don't even think they do physical training anymore.
we actually came back when I was still in the infantry. We came to Lahatta, which is the infantry training center in Postmasburg in the like eastern Karoo, and we did a training exercise. It was about a month long training exercise with the South African army, which was quite interesting, quite eye opening.
Yeah, you're being diplomatic, which I suppose is part of your training as well. So let me understand, because for many of us, the real fascination is what it is like to be in a country like Iraq or Afghanistan. First of all, talk to us about Iraq, and then tell us what it's like to be a soldier in Iraq.
I mean, Iraq for me was a big flash to bang. You know, I finished basic training and within 3 weeks I deployed as part of an infantry battle group to Iraq. And I mean, the hardest part for that was a week before I deployed, one of my multiple, which is the group within well, with the team within New Work, had actually been hit by a roadside bomb, and he lost his life. So, you know, I got in at a very sort of hard stage with my team. And it, you know, it's not easy. You know, you live, and you, I mean, it's not a lovely place. I mean, we were quite on the outskirts of the town, and that's how most of the bases are constructed. It's on the outskirts, so you've got a bit of a perimeter defense, and you've got some time to see people coming in. And, you know, when we went into the town, you know, it's hard. Eh? They don't have sewage systems, so the center of the street is where all the cuck goes, and I mean, the place stinks, and people aren't necessarily happy that you're there. So there was always hostility against us, which was never ever a nice thing. And you know, it is hard. You know, everyone's away from their families, and there's always that risk of going out and not coming back in. And I think that was always the hardest part about everything.
I understand that a lot of the big danger was these IEDs, these improvised explosive devices, that they would put in the road, or they would put in the way of people making movements and maneuvers. And many people lost their lives from those, not necessarily from firefights or from the kind of battles that they make movies out of, right?
Yeah, I mean, so we started, that's very true. The upper armored Land Rovers that were behind me in the photo that you showed previously, we started patrolling in those until one of the evenings where one of them drove over a roadside bomb and literally it obliterated the whole vehicle. All four people lost their lives in it. And then we moved over to an armored fighting vehicle, it's called a Warrior in the Army. It's just a tracked, very high armored, personnel carrier, sorry. And then we started patrolling in those. But I mean, like those four little Land Rovers could take up to about a 7.62 round, and that was about it. So yeah, no, the threat was very real. And I think that continued regardless of Iraq or Afghanistan. They became very, very smart with the way that they deployed those IEDs. And, you know, it was the biggest threat. I mean, firefights we could handle. Everyone was trained for firefights. But if you hit a roadside bomb, or if you hit an IED, if you walk over an IED, you know, you can't really do anything to combat that.
So, Ryan, what kind of guns? I'm a bit of a gun nut. What kind of guns did you guys use? And what were you most skilled at? What were you most well trained for in terms of arms and ammunition?
So Iraq was a little bit different. So we had the standard SA-80, which was it's a bullpup 5.56, so it's a NATO standard round rifle, and you can see it there
That's what you're holding in this picture, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, and that actually stayed from a general service rifle that stayed the whole way through my army career, all 11 years. They made small changes sort of as we went along, but the base of the SA-80 sort of stayed the same as we went through. And that was what infantry used. It's what engineers, every single unit within the army used those as their primary firearm. And then, so we didn't have sidearms in Iraq. When we went over to Afghanistan, we started with a CZ on my first deployment and moved over to Glock for my last deployment.
That's your sidearm, right?
That's your.
Okay, yeah. So what's the difference between Iraq and Afghanistan from a point of view of being a soldier in either?
So my view was Iraq was actually, you know, the places where we were within Iraq were more established. I think that the key difference between the two is obviously the Taliban and Sharia law. I think that within Afghanistan, obviously, that was more predominant than any of the other eastern states. And I think just also the sheer amount of people within the operational space was quite different. You know, Iraq was, I mean, we were a relatively small battle group. Quite isolated, where in Afghanistan, I mean, there were hundreds of thousands of people on the ground because it was, you know, it was a multinational effort.
And Afghanistan is a lot more backward and rural than people think. I mean, it really is. It's a Stone Age place in some ways. It's very tribal. There are conflicts between tribes that have nothing to do with the whole national question. The Taliban themselves, at various stages, were either in the ascendant or in complete decline. Some provinces were more dangerous than others. Helmand is particularly dangerous even today. It's probably the place you want to least find yourself in. And that was where the British Army was mostly deployed. I mean, you guys were probably around Kandahar as well, right?
Yes, So Kandahar was our main airfield. So that was, well, I say our main airfield, that's where most of the sort of American forward operating troops came out of from an air perspective. And then we were obviously in Bastion, but you always flew into Kandahar, and then from Kandahar got onto a C-130, which is essentially a troop carrier, and hopped over to Helmand from there, or to Bastion from there.
What is this picture here of this base, Camp
Abunaji? That is actually still our camp from Iraq. That was back in 2005. It looks like they haven't. I mean, I was shocked when I jumped onto Google to try and find them for you guys. So that's where we lived for 8 months. In the northern part of that photo is where us as troops sort of lived. They were expeditionary tents, and then that's our camp.
You mean no five-star hotel, no swimming pool? What's the point of being in Iraq with all that sun if you don't get by the pool all day?
Yeah, no, there was definitely no pool. We were lucky if we had aircon sometimes, but it was extreme camping. That's the easiest way to try and explain what it was.
Can't be very pleasant. And this is in Afghanistan, is it? This is a patrol base.
Yes, too. Yeah. So the economy of scale is that patrol base is small. I mean, we had a infantry company plus an Afghan Kandak, which is their equivalent to a company, living in there. And we were essentially the first ones in there, and that's kind of where we lived for 8 months. That was very, very rural. I mean, we didn't even have toilets. The engineers built us these wooden toilets that you could put plastic toilet bags onto to use the toilet.
My God. Ryan, when you guys were training the Afghan military, you were hoping that they would be able to sustain themselves. That was the international hope. That's what the US government, the British government, all the other governments involved, NATO and everybody else, they were hoping that these guys who you'd spent months, if not years, trying to bring up to speed, they'd be able to hold together at the time when it eventually came, where, you know, the international community would take a back seat. Are you surprised at how quickly everything folded? 11 days, they say, from the announcement of the U.S. withdrawal until the Taliban had virtually taken over every square inch of the country again. Are you surprised by that?
I wish I could say yes, I am, but I'm not. I mean, while we were there, we faced two problems. One was, I mean, and not taking anything away from them, a lot of them were very lazy. So, you know, there was that. They were, you know, it was a fight to get them to go out on patrol when we were training them. And the other issue was that, you know, our biggest threat from them was that internal to their own military, people would turn sides and then kill a whole lot of people in the name of the Taliban and then kill themselves. I mean, it was never ever a good place. And yeah, I mean, I lost a friend to that, and you know, that was obviously not easy. I'm not surprised. Look, unfortunately, we had such good intentions, and I think the international community had such good intentions going in there, and the hope that they would stand up and take the bull by the horns and actually start to look after their own country. But yeah, obviously, it didn't happen.
Tell me what it's like to live in Afghanistan for the ordinary Afghan, because we've spoken about you living in the camp, but what is that country like, and what kind of lives do people lead?
I think they lead a life of hidden fear. I think, you know, because the Taliban's been there for so long, I think that fear is ingrained in all of them. I mean, to be a female in that country must not be a very nice thing. And you know, I think everyone's heart goes out to them for that. But I mean, even as a male, if you didn't support the Taliban, it was never ever in a good place. But I think your average lifestyle is very rural. Most people are subsistence farmers. Life actually exists along the Helmand River. So you get like this arid desert up to a point where they've irrigated their fields, and then you get this beautiful, this lush green sort of farmland. And most of the population that outside of the main cities lives around the Helmand River. So it's very congested, as you said, very tribal. and just, yeah, a lot of farming goes on.
And the Taliban themselves, I mean, it seems like such a strange throwback to like almost the dark ages, but in some ways those skirmish armies of like the 1800s that you'd find in mountainous areas, these guys would just suddenly start shooting at you from some mountain somewhere, or you'd hear about a car that had been blown up somewhere. They were really opportunists, not a very well-organized military, are they?
No, so, I mean, there were three sort of groups within Afghanistan that we fought. You had obviously the Taliban, who were the old school guys who've been around for a long time and have had some sort of training within themselves. And then you had out of area fighters who were just, so there was obviously a lot of warlords within Afghanistan who have quite a lot of money. Obviously the poppies being the main source for heroin. Yeah, correct. Yeah, so you know, they brought in fighters from out of area, and they were usually relatively well trained fighters. And then you got like the third lot that we called $10 Taliban. So that was essentially it was a farmer who got given a rifle, got given a little bit of money, and said, "When these guys walk past, you shoot at them." So you know, you're very right. It was all very opportunistic. The only time we ever really had any coordinated attacks was when they attacked the smaller, like our patrol base. If we ever got attacked, you know, you would get attacked from multiple areas, and you knew that was a bit more coordinated than the sort of the shoot and scoot, which we used to call it from our normal patrols. But we combated a lot of that by doing, you know, we changed our patrol routes very often. We went out at different times, went to different places. So we didn't really allow them the chance to coordinate an attack while we were out on the ground.
And you can't have a routine, because they'll learn very quickly what that routine is, and then they'll take the chance of getting you guys. So what is this picture here? We've got who are these? Your fire support team?
Yeah, that's my my fire support team. So those are our vehicles behind there, the Buffaloes, and the light gun was the artillery piece within the UK armed forces that we had deployed to Camp Ashton as support.
By the way, that light gun, as you refer to it, the end of the of the barrel is two men's heads. Yeah,
it's because so the light gun, obviously that's a towed artillery piece. It's a 110 millimeter light gun, 100 millimeter light gun. So it's a 100 millimeter propelled artillery shell. And then we have the AS-90, which is the heavy artillery, which is obviously the 120 mil that can shoot 24.7 kilometers and makes a really big bang on the other end.
Yeah, you could take out a large mountaintop with that, right?
So I mean, you could do damage. So artillery itself is actually an area weapon. So you're never ever really trying to, you can't really destroy much ground with it. Look, you could take out a few buildings if you tried, but it's more of an area effect. So you've got a whole lot of infantry on the ground. You need to take them out. You put artillery onto it. You put a whole lot of vehicles. You put artillery onto it. If you want to put down a building or a top of a mountain, you drop a bomb from a plane.
Right. And you guys had air support from both the Americans and the British, right?
Sure. We had air support from Italians, French, Saudi Arabia, UK, British, Oman. Yeah, we had a lot of air support in Afghanistan. It was really impressive.
Was there any rivalry between the Americans and the Brits on the ground? Obviously, very different cultural ways of running things, and the military, you know, the military hierarchies are quite different. The kind of the way that they behave in the field is very different to how you guys in the British Army would have. Did you have any friendly rivalries there?
I think, yeah, I mean, there's always friendly rivalries between militaries when they're cohabitating. I mean, but when it comes to working on the ground, you know, we worked so much with the Americans that there was never ever, you know, we knew exactly what they needed. They knew what they needed to do. We knew what we needed to do. We had our own areas of responsibility. Very rarely did we do a big group together sort of effort. It would always work, you know, if we were going to do an assault or a search on a big village or two villages, they would have the one village, we would have the other village, we'd secure the two of them, and that would kind of be the operation done.
Ryan, I just want to know is what do you, because there's like fake tough guys like me who think, oh, I've run a marathon, I've actually done something. But you know, like you guys who are like, you don't need to talk about it. You're about that action. Is how do you feel when yuppies and dickheads like me start to talk about the price of freedom and the things that you're actually doing on the ground, and as you said, with good intentions?
For you, frankly, as politicians too, right, Mbulelo? You hear these.
Well, yeah, I was gonna. Yeah, yeah. I mean,
who's paying for that?
Yeah, and I mean, so that is interesting to me. Is obviously you've got that. There's dickhead diplomats that come and tell you what to do, and you actually need to do this stuff. How do you feel about these people living a soft life, telling you what to do, and actually what's happening when you know what's happening?
Yeah, I mean, I think my view on it's changed quite a lot since I left the army. It was quite hard being in the army and hearing a lot of the politicians talk and people talk about what's right and wrong that was happening within either the forces or the country when we were deployed. You know, at the end of the day, you know, if two people are in the same situation, they're going to act differently. And if one person is a highly trained and skilled individual, they're going to do it the way that they're trained. And, you know, it is what it is. Everyone fights their own battles. And I'm being very diplomatic with this. But, you know, I didn't like it personally, if you want my honest truth. I think that, you know, if you want to shout and tell people how to protect people's freedoms, go and do it for a day and see if you want to tell them after that, is my honest truth.
Yeah, and sorry, yes, Gareth, I've just got one more question. So, Ryan, I listen a lot to a guy called Jocko Willink. I don't know if you've heard from him. He was more Navy SEAL. And I just wanted to know as well, is you had the real experience. How do you feel about, so Jocko does massive podcasts and he's kind of brought that military reality into the world. Do you think that should stay with you guys and, you guys do that? It should almost stay in the locker room. Or are you comfortable with guys talking about it on the format to people like us and allowing us to almost comment?
I think it's cool. You know, I realized I struggled when I first started in the army to talk about my experiences, but I realized quite quickly that what I found normal and mundane of my life was fairly interesting to my friends and family and people that I talked to. So, you know, I'm a big proponent for people talking about what happened. It also allows people to deal with stuff in their brain because, you know, if you can't talk about something, it just sort of festers inside of you. And then, you know, I've lost friends to suicide post-Afghanistan. And, you know, it's hard because they didn't think they could talk about the stuff that they were experiencing. So I say 100%, you know, and it's with everything. Talk about everything in your life, whether it's your experiences, whether it's your relationships. It is really important to be able to talk to people about stuff.
Ryan, are there things that you have brought back in terms of skills that you use in the world now? I believe that you're actually involved in software development and like game development and stuff, which is amazing. That's a very big change of pace for you. But I also see a message here from Dean who says, Ryan, on a side note, thank you for protecting us during the KZN looting. You're such a legend. I mean, you know, this is probably not something you would have brought up if Dean hadn't mentioned it now. But you do have a set of skills after you've done what you've done for as many years as you've done it that put you in a position where you can be really useful in the world. You have abilities that the rest of us don't have when shit gets really untidy. And I think that stuff must be nice to know that you can rely on those skills, that you can pull them out of the cupboard, dust them off, and put them to work when you need to. Are there any other skills that you've got that you are pleased to have?
So I'm not necessarily a developer. I'm not a developer. I was a project manager. So, you know, organizing stuff and running to a schedule it just worked very well with my last role as a forward observer. Cause that's all you did is you planned a battle space and everything needed to happen at a certain time. So that I kind of fitted quite well into the project management space. And I was very lucky getting the role in the company that I'm with. And I enjoy it.
Dean brought it up, the KZN rights, you know, for me, no one expected that to happen. I think that's the biggest thing. So, you know, I left the army thinking that that's the last time I'm going to stand in a baseline in front of a whole lot of people that wanted to kill me. And never did I think that in my own hometown that was going to be the case. So you know, that was it was a shocking reality that it can happen, and it probably will happen again to anywhere in South Africa, unfortunately, I'll be very honest. So that week was crazy, and I was very thankful for the training that I had, and for, you know, I ran around sticking my hand up, telling people, like, I'll help, like, this is what I've done, please, just, if you need assistance with anything, please take me. So eventually it happened, and, you know, we started coordinating the community policing forums within the area, which was really cool. A group of us like-minded sort of people and business leaders and leaders within the community got together, and we started getting out some radios to people so we could start coordinating the different areas better. And we started working really well. And from that, we're starting to try to put together a little public benefit organization that'll help train the sort of the CPF within the area, look after the surrounding settlements and try and train them to add some value for them.
That's fantastic. It's amazing. Sure. Like, as you say, you didn't think you'd need those skills to go for again, and here they are. They're being worked on right now. We've got like 2-3 minutes. Lebang, you've been quiet, but I'm sure you've got some questions.
Yes, I've got three, but I'll just like crunch it down to two. So the first one, Ryan, is like, what are some of the stereotypes that we see? I mean, as the average person who isn't going to the army, what are some of the stereotypes that we see in movies that you can say from your experience are spot on, that is true, you're seeing a reflection of how it truly is? And the second question is, would you ever allow your kids to join the army, if you ever have kids?
So stereotypes, the shouty sergeant major, you always see in the videos and basic training where the guy's standing there screaming in people's faces, that definitely happens. And unfortunately, I'll say it very unfortunately, because I ended up as an officer, the brain in the clouds, young officer who doesn't necessarily know what's going on and runs around being guarded by his senior soldiers, is definitely a true stereotype in a lot of places. The question about my kids joining the army, my kids or any kids, I would recommend, you know, if that's the path people want to take, I'd say do it. You know, I had an amazing experience in my time in the armed forces. And, you know, it's unfortunate that I would say don't join the South African army maybe just yet. But if you've got the opportunity to join the UK or the US or a professional army, I'd say do it, because your experience outweighs anything that any part of the risk.
Sure. It's amazing. What do you miss the most?
My 1.5 month skydiving trips to California every year. The thing I miss, so you know, there's a lot of camaraderie. I mean, as an officer's mess, it's like a group of, I would say, I could only equate it to what I think an American frat house must be like. But you've got to go to war at some point. You know, the camaraderie and that fellowship is very strong. And I think that's probably the hardest thing, or that's the biggest element that I miss from my time in the army.
All the other guys are all over the world, right? You don't see each other regularly anymore.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, I mean, the nice thing is, you know, I mean, I speak to the bulk of my close friends from the military quite often. And, you know, some are still in, some have left. And so it's a quite a nice balancing act between, you know, what people are still doing and within the forces and what we've sort of achieved outside of them.
Well, Ryan, it's terrific to talk to you, and thank you very much for speaking to us. I know lots of former soldiers are not all that keen on the media because they're also in the way all the time in places like Afghanistan. And they tend to take your story, sensationalize it, and make it less about you and more about politics. So I appreciate you speaking to us very frankly this morning. There's so much more that I wanted to ask you. And maybe we talk again if you've got some time, because there are people here asking, you know, can we talk to Ryan for a whole hour, because I'm sure he's got some great stories. I'm sure you do. But well done on all the things that you've achieved, not only in the army, but these things that you've done since you've been back in South Africa. And the Greater Together Foundation is what you're involved in now. You're looking at how you can add value to the surrounding struggling communities through coordinated aid and training. And obviously, the logistical and operational part of things, which you're a master at because of your training, is where you add value. So the Greater Together Foundation, can we find out more about that online, or is there a community in Durban? What's the story?
So it's quite a big flash to bang with it. It's everyone's been doing it in their spare times. It's kind of just a passion project for a lot of us. So, you know, the website should be up and running, I'm hoping, by the end of this week. We've been running some briefings in the evenings at the Pearls in Umhlanga once a week, which has been quite beneficial, because, I mean, fundamentally, any organization needs funding, and that's kind of where we're at the moment, whilst still trying to do the work we can with the community outside of it. So if you want to find out more, the website should be up this week, and we should have some information on that.
Thank you so much. Cool. Good to see you. Isn't that cool? Isn't that interesting? Great to have
you. That's a real-life tough guy right there.
Yeah. And I
none of these juiced-up clowns and four-ways. That's a real tough guy.
Wow. Four-ways just gets dragged.
No, he's... Hey, but that's what for real looks like. Like, a lot of us think we're real. That guy's real. That is awesome.
I'm very excited this morning. We've got so much going on. It's been such a busy show so far, but it's not over yet. We've got to speak to Alex. You remember we had him not so long ago. Alex is the boss at Contro, and we've spoken about what Contro do. Contro.co.za is their URL. Alex Schmid is the guy who started the business, and he joins us again along with Dr. Sharmista, who is going to help us answer some of the questions that they get asked most often about the service they offer, particularly with regard to birth control. So it is with great pleasure that we welcome Alex back. How are you doing, man?
Hi, Gareth. How are you guys doing?
Excellent. Nice to see you. And Dr. Sharmista, it's very nice to see you this morning. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, morning. Thanks for having me.
So, guys, I'm going to get straight into it because I don't want to waste either of your time. There's so much noise around birth control in the world, and that's also something that's become political, and it's become messy, and it's become difficult for people to talk about. But let's just talk about birth control and contraception for a minute. Alex, what are the main questions that you get? Your business is new, but you guys are already supplying birth control to people. It seems to me a much more sensible way of doing it than having to go and get your local doctor, schlep to the pharmacy, have to get the thing reissued every time. With you, it all happens online, and you can explain that process to us in a minute. But what are the main questions you get from your clients about birth control?
To be honest, it's a range. I mean, I think what's quite shocking to us in some ways is just the sort of lack of education generally in the country with regards to birth control. We get questions about, you know, what are the different methods? How do they work? I think the biggest one we've had recently is, you know, how do I start my birth control? So I think the general education level around birth control in the country just isn't what it should be. And, you know, what we're trying to do is help educate individuals as well as trying to get them their birth control at the same time.
How do you get your medication to keep on the selection work? Remind us, in case people missed you the first time you came on and explained it.
Sure.
You need to go and see a doctor, for example. How does it work?
Yeah, so basically how it works is you sign up, you select, as an example, if you want birth control, you fill in our health assessment form, which asks all the questions that Sharmista would probably ask you in a consultation face-to-face, and once you've finished that health assessment form, you submit it, you check out, and you book an appointment with one of our partner doctors. That appointment can be booked within 24 hours, and it's online, and you do it through sort of Google Meet or your telephone if you don't have internet access, and you can have a chat directly to them. And Sharmista, being one of them, will help you choose a birth control method that is, you know, unique to your body and also your budget.
And Sharmista, let's be sensible about this. I mean, this is not something you need to actually make an appointment with your doctor every time to do. Once your doctor is familiar with you, just to allay people's fears, this is a perfectly safe way of doing things, right?
Yes, no, for sure. Once you have that first meet with the doctor, I mean, your initial history is taken. So you don't need a continuous every 6 months, the same thing being happened. The main thing with birth control is your blood pressure being taken, and to make sure that in terms of your health, you're not having any side effects with what you're on at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I mean, it's really just making sure that you've taken care of the basic concerns around any contraindications, that sort of thing, and then allowing people to just order this stuff and make sure that it's there when they need it. Because I mean, you don't want to be in a situation where you've run out of birth control, and that's precisely when there's a window of opportunity for something to go wrong.
Correct. And on this platform, it makes it so easy. I mean, with birth control specifically, it's a it's about taking it on time correctly and making sure you don't miss it. And with a platform like this, like just in case you don't have time to go to a doctor or, you know, follow up to go to a pharmacy, this just makes it easier. And on a platform like this, reminders come to you instead of you having to remember the night before or on the day.
How does the contraceptive pill actually work?
Okay, so with a contraceptive pill, we have two types. We have your progesterone only and your combined, meaning your estrogen and progesterone. What happens with your estrogen and progesterone are your sex, female sex hormones that prevent ovulation, that's egg being released for fertilization, as well as it changes the cervical mucus and the uterine lining to prevent an optimum condition for fertilization to happen, thus preventing pregnancy.
And how effective is it? I mean, is there a 95% chance that you won't get pregnant? Is that something that you guys have figured out to the percentile?
With the studies, it does show that both progesterone and the combined pill will be, if taken correctly, are 99%, 98 to 99% effective. Correctly mean that they are taken on time, they are not missed. It has to be taken every day.
I know that Lebang's got a bunch of questions for you here too, but one last one from me. I've heard lots of women talking about the contraceptive pill being used for acne, for example, mm-hmm. or any other things that it's not actually meant for. What are your feelings on those, and what do the rest of the doctors say too?
It is. Acne is one of the major benefits of being on a hormonal pill. For females, from the time you start puberty till forever, I think, with a female, your hormones basically control your metabolism and how your body works. So one of the benefits being acne, as it decreases your oil production and your sebum production, that's helping your acne. It also helps in terms of, in females, with your menstrual cycle, controlling your bleeding, controlling your cycle, helping with the pain, your PMS symptoms. So there is a range of benefits, not just the contraceptive side of it.
Mm-hmm. Doc, thank you so much for joining us. And I remember specifically just being younger and not really knowing enough about the pill and not having enough access to the information to take it confidently and to trust it confidently. And some of the stereotypes around the pill is that, you know, you put on a lot of weight and it doesn't react naturally to your body and you don't actually need it. Like, how true is that? Because that is still a very, very a big thing around the pill.
Yes, no, for sure. Number one being, I'm a huge advocate. I mean, being female myself, going through it, on this platform, you get, it's talked about, but in certain cultures, it's a taboo thing to approach your parents for or somebody, a doctor for. Here you get the information. Here you can talk to somebody with questions that if you're not confident in what's being explained to you. Number two, in terms of all the myths and facts, what's real, what's not real, remember, for anything in medicine or in life, everyone reacts differently. Your bodies are essentially, we're all made of the same thing, but all our chemical structure works differently and how we react it differently.
Yeah.
So essentially, the pill shouldn't, you don't gain weight as such, but it's, you may, as an individual, retain fluid. So it's more fluid retention that you have. And that should go away within the first 3 months of you taking it, as your body tries to get used to the foreign substance that you're taking, as with any other pill or medication that you would take.
Yeah. And what would you say are some of, like, the other actual benefits of, you know, taking the pill?
With females, I mean, PMS control is a big thing. A lot of people suffer from major cramping and pains, mood swings, that can actually be debilitating for a female that has to take like a day or two off in a cycle per month. So here we have, I mean, there's nothing wrong. It's not just being used for contraception now these days. It is being, as young individuals, you can go onto it from the age of 16 or even before if you have really bad acne, really bad hormonal control in terms of mood swings or back pain. So there are other benefits for it.
But you mentioned something earlier that I think is really important, is that there is a huge amount of shame and of I suppose, family pressure in many, many situations for young women. The minute you show any interest or you decide that it's time for you to start thinking about birth control, there's a lot of stereotyping that comes into this too, and a lot of families just are not even prepared to talk about this stuff. So a lot of girls are left out in the cold with no one to go to, and if they bought the stuff, you know, in a back alley somewhere, they don't know that it's safe. They also don't know who to talk to if something goes wrong.
Correct. And I feel that in this day and age, we need to be open about such things. It's not something to be ashamed of. And for now, such a situation that we want to protect ourselves. And as females, we have our careers and we want to aspire to other things. So it's all about empowerment for females, I think, as well, to know about your bodies, to know how things work. It all falls into that category. So everything should be, and as, you know, as a female growing up, we want you to have that open communication, but it's culture that and society that makes these topics taboo. And I think if we, as female doctors in particular, make it more, you know, okay to talk about this and open and make it an everyday thing, I think that will help young females and just females in particular for everyday going forward.
Alex, can I ask you a question? And by the way, Lebung's lack of birth control just walked into the room there.
He's giving for cool.
Do you need to be a mum for a second? Because I've got some questions.
Give me a moment.
Alex, when Dr. Shamista talks about how there's this platform, just how does it exactly work? So if I'm a young girl who's sitting at home now going, okay, this is a solution that seems right for me, what do I do? I go online? Do I have to talk to a doctor there? How do I ask questions? How do I make people less nervous about this?
So, I mean, it is a case of getting online. I mean, the first thing is obviously going to contro.ca.za and looking at the products we offer. Right now, we only offer birth control and erectile dysfunction medication, which is obviously for the male side.
You and I will talk about the hard-on pill some other time.
Yeah, we'll talk about that another time. But in terms of the birth control, I mean, I think the key point is we have a huge database of knowledge on our help desk. I think we have 130 questions regarding, you know, sexual health generally. And I think of that, 80 of them are birth control related. So if you're looking for information or sort of a first start in terms of trying to understand how the pill works or what you're looking, you know, what you need to get onto it, et cetera, you know, jump on Contro, jump to our help desk and type in your question. We'll probably have the answer there for you. And if we don't, we would encourage you to go through the process of ordering birth control, booking a doctor's consultation, which is only 150 Rand at the moment. Sorry, and then going and having a chat to one of our part-time doctors, one of them being Shamista, and asking the questions you want to ask.
And you can actually speak face-to-face with a doctor like Shamista?
Absolutely. You have a quick online call with him. You have a call like we're having right now, and it's about 15 minutes, and you can ask all the questions you want. And Shamista and our other part-time doctors will be more than happy to help you out.
Shamista, you doctors must love this because it's a hell of a lot easier than having to see someone in the rooms. And for much of this, you can ask the important and pertinent questions, find out what is required and make the prescription and help these people immediately. It saves you a whole lot of time, doesn't it?
Yes, for sure. I mean, especially now in this the COVID pandemic era, we ourselves don't want to expose ourselves. So this is one way of curbing that. And it's just for convenience for both our, from the patient side and the doctor side. You know, it's less travel time, less, you know, making appointments. People can reschedule. I can reschedule. So it's convenience, number one. It's a good platform because you're still talking to someone. You're getting your questions answered. It's not impersonal. And it's safe for both sides.
Well, I think that would be the biggest concern a lot of people would have is that we're so used to having to go to the doctor, having the doctor stick that thing on your tongue, look in your ears, measure your heart rate, your pulse, all that kind of thing. A lot of that stuff is probably unnecessary in this situation, but you can always do that as well. And you can speak to a doctor if you have concerns about those things.
Correct. And for example, birth control, you don't really, if you aren't something and you just need a repeat prescription, you don't need to have to physically examine each person every time. If I do have a concern and, you know, I would assess and ask from the health assessment questionnaire that is asked before the consult, and during my consult, I'll ask them pertinent questions surrounding that history. And if I feel that, no, you do need to go for some blood tests or have an ultrasound done, I will advise for that to be done first and the results sent to me before I do prescribe.
Fantastic. And Alex, you say it's only, what, 150 Rand to get a consultation?
It is, but for Women's Month, up until the 31st of August, we're actually offering 50 Rand off your consultation with the promo code WM50. So jump onto Contro at checkout, put on WM50, and you'll get a consultation for 100 Rand only.
WM50.
Okay, WM50, that's it.
Yeah. Very good. So you're actually doing something for Women's Month, unlike all the politicians who just talk about it. Nice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good.
I mean, there we go. If there's any woman in your family, if you yourself are worried about this, I mean, $100 will get you a consultation with a doctor. You can talk to them about whatever your problem is. As you know, doctors keep everything confidential. You can order your birth control from Contro online. It'll arrive. You know it's safe. You know it's the proper stuff. And you can get on your journey of looking after your own reproductive health and being in charge of your own destiny, which I think for so many women, step one, right, Lebang? I mean, this is massively important.
Definitely. I just think the biggest thing is that, you know, that stigma that's involved in the stereotypes is completely removed, and we won't need to feel like we're doing something wrong or like we're, you know, we're not empowering ourselves. I think the medium that you guys have chosen is really dope. I'm excited to see what Contra can do for, you know, the next generation of young girls who want to empower themselves and have access to this information, but are still scared because of what their family is going to say, because of what their friends are going to say, and hopefully this can empower them to lead by example within their friendship circles and within those circles to, you know, to help other young girls who also want to, and other young boys. I was going to ask what you guys are doing for the male side of things, but I know we'll definitely have time for that conversation in the future.
Absolutely. Yeah, go and find out more by going to contro.co.za, and Alex's team are all poised and ready to take care of all your questions. And you find most of it for free on the website too. But then if you do want to know more, you can also get to speak to a doctor. So it's, you know, it's safe, it's healthy, it's the way to go. And of course, you know, anything else you need to know, they'll be happy to answer too. So thanks, Alex. Good to see you again. And
very
good to meet you, Dr. Shamista. It's very nice to have you on the show this morning. It's always good to talk to professionals and people who know what they're talking about when it comes to this. So many people are embarrassed. So many people are concerned. So many people have family pressures and all kinds of other things. It's time for us to open up about it and start to take care of ourselves.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers, man.
Everybody. All right, there's Alex and Dr. Shamista. And Lebang, thanks for being with us on the show this morning. We will see you
on
your own
show. Thank you for the invite.
Yeah.
Yes, tomorrow from 11 till 12, Life with Lebang. It's going to be a good one. I'm going to be unpacking something so relevant to every single South African. So definitely, definitely tune in. Otherwise, listen to the podcast at your own time.
Go and look after the children now. They're about to leave. All right, we'll see you next week. Thanks, Liban.
Cheers, bye.
All right, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow at 6 o'clock right now.